The Woj Pod is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Hey everyone, welcome into an NBA regular season edition of the Woj Pod, and welcome into the new general manager of the Sacramento Kings, Monty McNair. Monty, happy start to the season and happy start to the Kings season tomorrow night against Denver.
Thanks for having me, Woj, and yeah, we're excited to get going, and it's been a crazy off season, but we're about to play basketball. I think that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, it seems like a very 2020 thing that the new general manager of the Kings is actually in Houston. The Sacramento team he's the GM of now is in Denver, but that's your reality here for the holidays, right?
Yeah, no, I think in a normal year, I'd go back and forth and make sure I was there. But this year, it takes a week or two to test back in. And so after the off season that I was away from the family for a couple months, I decided to at least spend the holidays with my wife and two kids. And actually, we play the Rockets here in Houston twice, a new two-game series, also a 2020 introduction, and so I'll catch those two games, and then we're gonna make the move up to Sacramento permanently.
Yeah, it's funny. In talking to other team executives about traveling around, and especially those who are living away from family right now, if you started a new job somewhere, you're not necessarily moving your family right away. And a few of them have said they're gonna go back to the city they live in for the holiday for a couple days, and they can get tested daily at the facility of their old team. And so there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that going around. It's just the reality. You cannot just move around and walk back into your facility with the protocols in place.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually been going back to the old stomping grounds at the Toyota Center every morning to get my test. So I can go to the games here, and hopefully when I do get back to SAC, ease my way in. But it's a new reality this year.
Monty, when you take over a new job and you become the GM of the Kings, and I would imagine the first thing you want to do is you want to get to know people, and you want FaceTime with people, and you want to be around them. You want to learn about them. You want them to learn about how you'd like things to go. How difficult has that been in a pandemic where you're doing so much virtually, especially when you're trying, to get off the ground in a new job?
Yeah, I think really the two things that you want when you're starting up to get to know people is FaceTime and just time in general. And we had neither this off season. It was so fast. We went right. I think I got hired less than 2 months before the draft, and then it was the fastest off season ever. So there wasn't that much time. And then with the pandemic, people aren't coming into the office. A lot of our scouts are remote. You didn't have the ability to just sit down and have a cup of coffee, have a meal and get to know somebody. So phone calls, and then, Zoom, at least you can see people, and get it, put a face to a name. So that helps some, but I say it's pretty hard. There's still a few of our scouts who are out on the road, and that I haven't met in person yet, but I do feel like we've been on so many Zooms. We know each other a little bit.
Looking at this team, Monty, and taking over 14 years without a playoff appearance, it certainly looms over that Kings organization. What did you know about the Kings when you're going to go in and interview with ownership and the upper executive level? What did you know about Sacramento, about the organization, and how did you look at it when you're an assistant GM with the Rockets and walking in the door to meet with those guys for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, I think my first recollection of Sacramento was from the glory days growing up and watching the Vlade, Jason Williams, all those, Peja, all those playoff teams. Obviously, a hard time since for Sacramento, but I think normally if you're going into a new job, a lot of times the cupboard's bare, and the cupboard's definitely not bare here. We have a lot of talent on the roster. All the picks are there, plus some extra picks as well. And, so as I dug in, preparing for the interview, I actually kept getting more and more excited. And when eventually I got tabbed, it was a thrill, and it's been a whirlwind, but it's been fun ever since to get to dive in on everything organizationally.
It is a fan base unlike many in the league. And you would think that a team that has not had the success since the glory days you're talking about with the Kings and been out of the playoffs that long would have a sense of apathy, would have a sense of, you know, just kind of doom and gloom and maybe not a real engaged fan base. And it is not the case in Sacramento. It remains rabid. I'm sure you feel that when you walk in there as a GM, that it is a place that is really hungry for someone to get this turned around and get this team back to relevancy in the league.
Yeah, no, it's actually been amazing. And, these fans, are certainly frustrated and want a playoff team, but I have some friends of teams in other leagues, especially, and they haven't made the playoffs in so long. And they kind of, like you said, they go into more of like an apathy or a pessimism mode of it's never going to happen. These fans in Sacramento are just on the like edge of their seats, waiting to explode. And, I think my job and our team's job, is to get them back there and get back to those glory days when they were making the playoffs multiple years in a row. And, the city and the fan base was, rejuvenated. So, it's really that plus the new arena, which is fantastic. I do think the recipe for success is there. We just got to get the final ingredients.
Yeah, you mentioned that the recipe or the formula to win in Sacramento, and you mentioned having all of your draft picks. I mean, ultimately, is it that in a smaller market in a place that's considered maybe less of a destination market among, the Los Angeles, LAs and, potentially the New Yorks, Brooklyn, I would say. New York hasn't been one. But is the draft ultimately where you have to, in a smaller market, hit on your guys to be able, to really get a program turned around?
I think it's certainly one of the best ways. I mean, really, everybody kind of talks about there's three ways. There's free agency, trade, and the draft. I think certainly the draft is a big part of that, but I think guys in this league also, they want to win. And, you guys follow winning. And I think it, even in Houston, which is a bigger market, more of a free agent destination, we had trouble going the free agency route, until we had one star in place. And, once that happened, we were much more successful. And so I think certainly, cities and markets can matter some, but I think winning can trump all that. And so that's, I think once the wins come, the players will follow.
And I think that's a great point, Monty. And I always thought that Dwight Howard was a real turning point for the Rockets, because Dwight was the preeminent free agent at the time, and he was with the Lakers. He had forced a trade largely to the Lakers. Free agents did not leave LA. And I thought when Dwight left LA to Houston, Daryl Morey and the group you had in Houston, I think really sold him on the idea that this is, if you want to win, we have the setup and you're the missing piece for us. I always thought that was, and then, later Chris Paul, now that wasn't exactly free agency. It was, the sign and trade, it was almost half free agency. But do you remember that as a turning point in Houston for maybe how you were viewed around the league?
Yeah, certainly. I think, that was kind of the first big free agent that we landed. We went to a Western Conference Finals. Obviously didn't have the ultimate success there, but yeah, I do think that was a big turning point and kind of showed that we were ready to take that next step.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
I want to talk more about the Kings, Monty, but you think of kind of those formative years in Houston, and you're in a, I mean, I kind of know the setup there in the front office, and Daryl's the GM, but there's a back office. There's a back office of desks and cubicles, and there was a time where it was you and Sam Hinkie and Gerson Rosas. Arturis Karnishevis, now the Chicago GM or Chicago president, was there for a fairly short time. Rafael Stone, obviously, is the GM there now. What was it like? Because Daryl wanted every idea in the world, right? There was nothing you couldn't throw. I've seen that big board you have in there. I've seen some pretty crazy trade ideas and, you know, some innovative thoughts just written up on that big whiteboard you have in there. What were those days like being a part of that and maybe sort of shaping, you know, how you approach the job?
Yeah, and I should also add in Sachin Gupta, former ESPN employee and now now in Minnesota, Eli Whitus as well, who's working with Rafael still in Houston. But it was, yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, credit to Daryl, and something I want to implement and have started implementing here in Sacramento, which is it's not the idea of the most important person that wins. It's just the best idea that wins. And yeah, I mean, I started out as a 22-year-old, you know, fresh out of college. And, you know, it was almost like a think tank. We were there just coming up with as many crazy ideas as we could. And, you know, the ones that stuck, we would force Daryl to make some calls on and try to get done. And, you know, Sam ultimately went on to Philadelphia. But when he was there, there was a lot of meetings with him and our group and just, you know, really trying to brainstorm as many crazy ideas as we could at one time.
What was the craziest idea you ever remember in that room?
Oh man. Let's see. I would say one is we were desperate for a top 10 pick. And I believe it was Golden State one year. And everybody knows you can protect picks, right? Usually protect like the top 10, but you can protect any assortment of picks you want. And at the time, I think they were the number 7 pick before the lottery, and they could have moved up to the top 3 or they could have moved back to 8 if somebody else jumped them. And we had 3 picks, 14, 16, and 18, if I recall. And we offered, I think, 16 just for 7, only if they stood at 7. If they got 1, 2, or 3 or 8, they just got number 16 pick for free. But if it was 7, we got to trade up for 7. And that was ultimately, I think both sides got a little scared. That was a little crazy. But it did. We did come to fruition. You see all these sandwich picks. I believe we were the first one when we traded Kyle Lowry to Toronto, where they protected the top part of the draft, but we protected the back end, make sure we got a lottery pick out of it, which ultimately ended up being a big part of the Harden trade. But that was a pretty crazy one where we could have given up a pick for absolutely nothing.
I'm trying to think, what was the idea of giving up a pick for free? It was almost like a grocery store promotion or something, right? Like you can, if you, I mean, I'm trying to think of the equivalent of it. I've never heard that
one. Yeah. It was, whatever it was, a third of the time you move up 9 spots right. for free, but 2/3 of the time you lose a pick for nothing. And, like we were upside seeking that then. And, but it was funny that, you know, all these biases that we're all trying to get rid of, both sides couldn't get rid of, and I think shied away at the end. But yeah, maybe a supermarket promotion. There's probably one of the listeners will come up with a better analogy.
I'm sure they will. The one thing that had been described to me, Monty, and I think you feel this way, you know, sometimes when you're coming up in that role in a front office and you're not always around the players as much, or you're not around the coaches, and then you go to a place and you become GM and maybe don't have the feel for the human side of it. That's been the criticism sometimes of people who come up perhaps your background. But your job in Houston for several years was really working closely with the head coach, with the locker room. And I wonder the impact that had on you in learning. You played football in college and you've been in the locker room and you knew, but describe the role you had working with, I guess it probably went Mikhail Bickerstaff, Mike D'Antoni, of maybe analytically working with them about, you know, how you're integrating some of the numbers with what they're doing on the court and sort of how that shaped your, maybe your progress toward becoming a GM.
Yeah. No, I didn't just play college football, Woj. I played at the most prestigious college football program in the country at Princeton. We have 28 national titles. Yes, the last one was like in 1910, but
and the first college football game ever against Rutgers always advertises that, right?
That's true.
The first
That's
college
true.
Football game ever. I guess it was
That's
Princeton.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
All joking aside, it was, the locker room, being around that in college, obviously it can't compare to an NBA locker room, but it gives you a little bit of a sense of what these guys are going through. But yeah, being around the team, like you said, I started with Coach McHale, JB Bickerstaff took over, and eventually Coach D'Antoni. And I think it helps, I did a lot of support analytically and things like that, but by far the biggest thing was learning how to communicate to them. And it's all about, you're all trying to speak the same language and what is something, that resonates with them? What is something that turns them off? And then even outside of that, like just being around the team, what are the players dealing with on a day-to-day basis? I mean, sometimes you get into a city, it's 3:00 in the morning. I wake up the next morning, I feel horrible. And I didn't play 40 minutes that night. So when you're trying to, push something, maybe rotation wise, and the coach, you realize, wow, yeah, they're dealing with trying to make sure their jet lag players are ready to go on a back to back. All the pressures coaches deal with, besides, I used to joke with Coach D'Antoni and say, like, Mike, how much of your job is actually coaching? And he's like, I don't know, 10%. So much of it is dealing with the media, dealing with the players, building those relationships, managing ownership in the front office and the fans and the training staff and everybody. It's really it's a business in that there's so many constituents, and just being around day to day, I think was really the biggest thing that helped me now in this job, and knowing all the pressures and different things that these people face, as opposed to just looking at it from the outside in.
You mentioned whether it's working with Mike D'Antoni and knowing the things that they don't like or that don't resonate with them. What did you learn were one or two of those things that might seem good numerically or might seem good theoretically that don't necessarily translate the way you think they might, or you learned, hey, that doesn't work with that. That's not what my head coach needs from me.
Yeah, I would say, first and foremost, and I've been working with our group here in Sacramento, don't use a number if you don't have to. Yes, when you're trying to determine what you think is the best thing, you should do what you're comfortable with. But when you're trying to communicate that, it's about trying to find find the language that that's going to work with them. And you know, coaches are much more comfortable with video, you know, with conversations, and you're just trying to get the point across. You don't need to explain the nitty gritty, just like, you know, just like coaches, when they're talking to fans, don't need to get into maybe all the details of their scheme, right? You're trying to communicate, you know, a concept, in a way that, that they can understand and ultimately implement. And so, you know, I think that was a big one. We used a lot of video. I think that's an amazing currency, right? Coaches use it with players. We started using it with coaches. And I think that was a great way to speak the same language. Yeah, it's more about how can I explain this? You know, how can I get into their head and see what would resonate with them? Not just project what resonates with me.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
You go to Sacramento, Monty, and you know what the perception can be when you come in as a new GM and there was a coach, Luke Walton, already in place. Well, everybody thinks, well, he's not your guy, and how are they going to build a relationship? And everybody wants to get their own guy in there. And how did you approach it with Luke from the beginning and building a relationship as a new GM with a coach who's already in place? How have you gone about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, I don't care about my guy, quote unquote. Like, you know, I'm looking for a guy that's going to help us win. And the first step in that is to build a relationship with him. And I think Luke said it too. I mean, he had a great relationship with Vlade, and it's been hard on him. And realizing that I'm coming in from the outside, somebody, we had some mutual friends, but we had, you know, we had never really met before. And so we've just spent our last 2 or 3 months, you know, just talking, especially early on. It was just, hey, let's sit down, just talk about, you know, not even basketball. Let's just talk about life and how we just think about things. And ultimately we got more and more into basketball. And the number one thing that's been great with Luke is Luke is easy to work with, and he will listen. And I try to reciprocate that. And, you know, it really is a partnership. You know, there's, you can't win in this league without, you know, we alignment's kind of a buzzword, but it's true. Ownership, front office, head coach, all the other health and performance, et cetera. But it really, you know, on the basketball side, starts with the head coach and the GM. And so we've been building that. And so far it's been fantastic.
Yeah. You mentioned that, Monty, and you talk about alignment. And when you go into Sacramento, listen, you know, Vivek Ranadive, the owner there, you know, has a reputation. There's a history there of his involvement, maybe sometimes not always positive on the basketball side in terms of decision-making. What did you want to know about how that structure was going to work? Listen, there's very few places you're going to go in the NBA where there's just straight autonomy. I don't know if there's any GMs who really just every decision ultimately rests at the very, very top, especially the big ones. How did you work through that in coming in the door and so that you can have a structure in place that you feel like is streamlined enough and consistent enough, and you can build a philosophy and stick by it and win? How did you go walk through that with him?
Yeah, that was part of the interview process was that, and coming in from the outside, you know, you just have the, you know, the perception of what you've seen there. But yeah, it was you know, really, I think the number one thing was, you know, will me and my staff have the opportunity to, you know, build this team in the way that we think is best. And part of that is taking input from lots of people. Like you said, I don't think very, very few people just make a decision solely on their own. And there's input from lots of places, but became very comfortable that his vision on how he wanted me in our front office to work, aligned with what I wanted. And so far it's borne out. I will say though, like so much of a GM's job these days is not to like implement his opinion. It's to take all these opinions, your coach, your assistant GMs, the rest of your staff, ownership, your health and performance staff. And really you're just trying to like put all these things together. And then it's once you have that decision, can you implement it? And that's what we've been able to do so far. And, you know, I think that'll continue going forward.
What was the whole Bogdanovich restricted free agency, the decisions you had to make there, was that really sort of the first test for you of how you're going to make decisions, how you're going to take on all that input? I'm sure there were a lot of different voices there. Some people saying, let's just match an offer sheet and keep him. He's an asset. There's some, let's do a sign and trade for him with Atlanta. Was that the first test of, okay, I'm in the big seat now. And this is a big decision. Was that the first one you felt like you really faced?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it was all so fast. The draft was right in there too. But yeah, certainly the Bogdanovich decision was, front and center. And yeah, we looked at, looked at a lot of different options, between sign and trade, obviously trying to sign him as well. And then ultimately the offer sheet decision that we were faced with from Atlanta. But it was, we went through our process. We, once we got the offer sheet, we sat down, we had, whatever it was, a little more than 48 hours to go through it. And, let's put all the factors on the board and let's go through them. And not once was the factor, anything other than what is going to be best for this team, this organization going forward. And it was a tough decision, but obviously ultimately we ended up not matching, but it was certainly stressful, but probably the most fun one I've had so far in just like all the components that went into it and the compressed time frame and having our guys in our room and on Zoom kind of working through all that and trying to come to the best decision.
And you kind of know you're going to probably be faced, listen, you're going to get criticism in the chop no matter what, but it is I would imagine it is the hardest thing. I understand the reasons in doing it, but the one thing though some people will always say is you don't let an asset leave, right? You keep it, you get the value, you can trade them later. Was that the one where you go, the first thing I'm going to do is let a guy walk and not get anything for him? Now it opens up a lot of other flexibility for you, but there's got to still be a moment of truth where you go, okay, like that may not be well received in some corners, is to do it this way.
There was maybe a little bit of that, mm-hmm. Luckily, yeah, we were, pretty focused just on what was going to be the best thing. We had, we had just gone through the draft and really been surprised and excited that that Tyrese Haliburton fell to us. And that kind of also gave us a little extra push that, hey, we've got this guy coming in. He's a 1-2. We're really excited about him to get him at 12. And, so all those kind of things came into play, but yeah, I don't think like there's so many decisions we're going to make. Yep. And I guess maybe it was one of the first and one of the biggest, but, ultimately I think what I took from Houston is you continue to make what you think is the right and best decision, and eventually they'll add up for you.
Yeah. And I thought that was a very underrated part of that process, was Haliburton getting to you on draft night. I was shocked he was there. There were a few teams who kept hitting me above you that were in front of you who were dying to know who was going in front of them. And I was sure a couple of them were taking Haliburton and they didn't. Did you have a sense he might get to you, or were you, when he got to 8, 9, 10, you're going, okay, someone's grabbing him here?
Yeah, we, I think the going through, 13 of these before this, you kind of learn to expect the unexpected. And especially I think in this draft, there was a lot of really good players, And there was much less consensus. So we thought there was maybe a chance, but we thought pretty small given what we saw on his film and in his numbers and with his, you know, kind of background and everything that all added up. So, yeah, we were definitely a little bit surprised, but, you know, we were prepared, you know, like you got to prepare for everything. I think one of my first drafts, was it Darrell Arthur? There was a guy, I think it was Darrell Arthur, was supposed to go maybe in the lottery and fell all the way to the back end of the first round. And, you know, after that, like we stopped preparing for our pick and you just prepare your whole board because you might move up or down or a player might fall and you just got to be ready. So, yeah, we were a little surprised, but obviously we were prepared for it.
It, Monte, I thought an interesting, you talk about building out your front office. And this is an unusual circumstance where the assistant general manager you hired, Wes Wilcox, was somebody who also interviewed for the job, was a finalist along with, I mean, think of the two final, a couple of the other finalists, Sachin in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, who works with Gerson there now, maybe as close of a friend you have in the business, right? You, not only did you work, you came in together in Houston, I mean, did you guys? You guys may have literally started at the same time with the Rockets, right?
Yeah, Sachin started maybe a year or so before me.
Yeah,
but we spent 5 or 6 years together.
Yeah, and so there's Sachin. So you're going at it with him for the job, and then Wes Wilcox again, who had been a general manager with Atlanta and been in some really good front offices in the league. You're offered the job, you accept it. And then the next thing you know, you're going through a process to bring him on as assistant GM. You don't really know him. I thought it said a lot about, hey, I'm going to get the best people and who fits and not worry about all that ancillary stuff. What was that like getting to know him? And I'm sure there were people in the league who said to you, geez, do you want to hire a guy who wanted your job? How did you work through all of that?
Yeah, it was, once you get the job, then all of a sudden all these things you've never thought of before. But yeah, first and foremost, you got to hire a staff. I didn't know Wes beforehand, but, going through the process and he actually flew out to Houston to meet with me in person, which was an awesome gesture and great to get to know him. I was basically trying to build out this staff of just the best people I could find. And like I said before, you know, best idea wins. We're trying to just get as many good people in as we can. And Wes is not just experience as a former GM, but, kind of his skill set I thought was very complimentary to mine and ultimately went with him. And he's been nothing short of amazing so far, as well as the rest of our group. You know, we brought in Phil Jabbour, who I worked with in Houston, to kind of head up our scouting and personnel department. Paul Johnson's going to be our G League GM from OKC. So as well as we kept Ken Catanella on. So we've got, you know, Wes, who's been in multiple organizations, Phil, who's been with Philadelphia and Orlando and Houston, and Paul, who's been with Oklahoma City. And so we're kind of getting the best of all these, I think, top organizations and trying to mesh it together.
You know, Matthew, you mentioned sort of talking to guys in other sports, in front offices who, you know, comparing fan bases and how it might be for them if their team hadn't been in the postseason for 14 years. Are there any other front offices and other sports where you've gotten to know the guys or you've gotten a chance to study how they do things and said, hey, that's something I want to incorporate? How much time as you've been preparing to become a GM, have you done that and looking outside the NBA and trying to find some things that might, you know, approximate to what you might want to do?
Yeah, no, we love to learn from other sports. And, you know, I think everybody is kind of following baseball's lead. They've kind of been at the forefront, at least analytically. And probably to me, you know, originally the preeminent organization doing that was Tampa Bay. And we actually early on in Houston went to meet with them when Andrew Friedman was their general manager. And I ended up forging some friendships with three guys who are now running their own team. So Eric Neander is Tampa Bay's GM. Chaim Bloom is now with the Red Sox, and James Click just came here to Houston and is running the Astros. And over the years, just picking their brain. I remember one time James Click and I were talking, we were talking about how in basketball we can improve, our player development, how our players are shooting shots pregame or after practice. And he was talking about exactly the same thing, but in the batting cage, and how you can replicate game situations as good as possible and things like that. And it was really illuminating, and we were able to, I think take some things. That was just one example, but that's a great one in football as well. I think in some ways baseball is a kind of a good starting point, but football is a better analogy because you've got really, we have five, they have 11 guys that are working together. Baseball's a little more of an individual one-on-one battle often between the pitcher and the batter. So football, we've had a lot of good, kind of discussions with, and even sometimes we'll take from sports you wouldn't even expect, ideas here or there from tennis or hockey or even golf. So, we're just looking for any kind of, seed of that we can take, and baseball and football have been great.
Yeah, football, your own football career at Princeton, wide receiver, right? Wore number 88, which to me it seems like I would be giving my big recruit number 8. If a kid's coming in as a wide receiver, 88 is like the preeminent. Were there like bigger, like you got number 88 as a freshman? Was the expectation that like you were going to catch 150 balls at Princeton? How do you get 88 as a wide receiver at Princeton? Did they just hand it out in the equipment room one day, or did you have to negotiate for it?
No, I wish it was that. Unfortunately, I'll have to belittle myself a little bit. My freshman year, I got number 34, but not even number 34. I was the second number 34. Right. There were more than 100 people on our team. You don't even have your own number. 88 opened up my sophomore year. And I grabbed that, and it was availability was the main reason I got that one. But unfortunately, it was not one of the premier recruits, and didn't really get pick of the litter of my favorite number. So not a great story there.
Yeah, well, when you dig through the Princeton football archives, and you have to dig a little bit, but there was. Your junior year, right? You play at the University of San Diego, which is about as close to home as you're going to get to play going to Princeton. I mean, that's you're in Southern California. You're from Ventura County, further north. And the coach at San Diego was one of your childhood heroes, right? Jim Harbaugh was the coach at USD. And now, according to Princeton Sports Information Records, a spectacular diving catch for his first career catch by Monty McNair. Can you relive that? Is that an accurate description of your first college catch? And
yeah, well, you were a really good elite player when you can remember probably vividly all four of your catches. But yeah, it was a play action double post. I was the inside receiver, and I think it was a diving catch because I lacked the speed to catch it in stride. But it was my first catch, and my childhood hero, Jim Harbaugh, reason I'm a Colts fan from Southern California, which makes no sense, was on the other sideline. I'm sure he was looking on proudly.
Yeah, I know he reminisces. I know he shows them the film room at Michigan quite often. They pull that they pull that thing up. No, that's great stuff. But Monty, this was fun. I'm glad we got to catch up. Good luck with the start of the season, and happy holidays to the McNairs. In Houston. Now, wait, so your drive, I want to leave you with this. You're going to drive back to Sac with the whole family. Now, describe this caravan. It's a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and your wife's she's pregnant again, yes. Right?
Yes.
Is that what we have? Is that the family caravan headed north?
Yeah, the family caravan. We got my daughter Birdie is 4. My son Towns is 2. My wife is pregnant, due in March, and we've got our really manly golden doodle dog Sherlock, who will be sitting on people's laps and wreaking havoc. So we'll be packed to the brim. I think it's a 30-hour drive. We're going to have to divide it up into multiple stops. But ultimately excited to get back to California, and excited to get the whole family in Sacramento. So I'm not sitting in my apartment alone anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, happy holidays. Safe trip when you make that. And good luck with the tip-off for the Kings tomorrow night in Denver.
Thanks, Woj. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to our guest today, Sacramento Kings General Manager Monty McNair. Be sure to listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to listen to The Low Post with Zach Lowe and The Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst. Have a great holiday, everyone. We'll catch you next time. There's a new podcast I want to tell you about. 30 for 30 Podcast presents March 11th, 2020, a standalone audio documentary that tells the story of the day the NBA shut down and the pandemic became real for many Americans. As told by those who lived the events of the day and built entirely with archival and exclusive interviews, including Rudy Gobert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, March 11th, 2020 will tell the story of a day that started in one reality and ended in a new one. 30 for 30 Podcast present March 11th, 2020. Subscribe now and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.